I'd like to introduce my three co-authors, who are all more than 30 years younger than me, Jessica, Charles, Lindsay, and Ashley. I guess, the source of inspiration, but they did all the work on this. This is all their pictures, their data, et cetera, that I'm presenting. Actually, I said I had no disclosures, but it occurred to me that I get a lot of funding from the President's Emergency Plan on AIDS relief, which is actually promoting this, so maybe that's a lie. We talk a lot in public health. What we're usually trying to do is prevent something from happening. And so we use prophylactics. You know, we get the plaque scraped off our teeth so we won't get gum disease. We take doxycycline in malarious areas so we won't get malaria. For HIV, we use male circumcision. We use condoms. We promote monogamy, although that doesn't necessarily work either. When we do these things, we talk a lot now, it's almost a mantra, about evidence base, and especially scientific evidence. Oop, I'm going backwards now. I think I have to use your thing.
Okay.
Okay. So much so that about 6 years ago, there was an article in the British Medical Journal about, it was a serious survey that found out there was absolutely no evidence that parachutes, there were no controlled trials to show that parachutes really reduce morbidity and mortality created by gravitational challenge. Now, most of us think parachutes probably do work if you're going to jump out of an airplane or off a tall building. I want to ask a similar question about female virginity. Premarital virginity. Should we be prescribing premarital virginity to women as a prophylactic to prevent HIV and other health risks? Now, it's happening already. This is HIV/AIDS in Africa, I believe. Again, in Africa, stay in school. Abstinence. You'll avoid warts, you'll avoid STDs, you'll avoid unwanted pregnancies. It's being prescribed all over the place, especially US government funding. We spend about $200 million a year on abstinence programs in the US. USAID funds abstinence programs in Latin America, and PEPFAR funds abstinence programs in a major way in Africa. In fact, the reason I'm doing this presentation today, what inspired it, is an incident that happened about a year ago. We have a major project in Côte d'Ivoire, and we have seven pre-selected civil society organizations, and one of them submitted a proposal for a grant, and in it there was Les Concurrences pour la Virginité, virginity contest. And I looked at it. I was in Asia at the time, and I thought, what is this anyway, you know? I'm more of a virgin than you are, or what are they doing? And I wrote them a note and said, I don't want to impose my Western values on you, but what does this mean about gender equity and a few other things? And apparently they had a big debate there, and eventually it got dropped from our proposal, but it had been previously funded by the American government. They had virginity contests in their previous grant. And what they were doing, when I finally got to talk to the man, is they were reviving a tradition which had died out, where they inspect the bed sheets the morning after a marriage to see if there's blood on the bed sheets. And the man in charge of it explained to me, I need some water, explained to me that, I said, don't they fake it? They kill chickens and so forth? He said, yes, yes, they fake it all the time, but we have this method. We get a snow white rooster and we put it on the bed sheet. And if the rooster stays on the bed sheet, then it really was the blood of a virgin. But if the rooster flutters away, it was faked. It was, you know, blood from somewhere else. So that was the scientific method. And we have, so we are looking at a hodgepodge of things that's the global situation. From the abstinence only, the virginity pledges in the United States, to the revival of a tradition that had died out completely in South Africa, which is virginity testing in this photograph. Um, And we're trying to look at what is the evidence here. What are the contraindications, if there are contraindications? What are the side effects? And I mean the social side effect as well as other side effects. What's compliance like? We usually think about that when we prescribe a medicine. Is compliance easy? As one person pointed out, no marriage, no sex for the rest of your life. Stigma and some of the other stigma issues we've talked about here, and the socio-political issues. We spend about $200 million a year on abstinence and Be Faithful programs in the United States. There's no evidence that these work well. All of the evidence is that people drop out, and in fact, it turns into something that's riskier. Here we have pledgers and non-pledgers. Pledgers are less likely to use birth control once they become sexually active. 90% of those who take the pledges do become sexually active. They are less likely to use condoms. Okay. Why are virginity pledges failing? Most of the participants develop negative attitudes about the effectiveness of condoms because of the way the training is done. The curriculum are inaccurate and misleading. 11 out of 13 federally funded abstinence programs were found to have incorrect information. Texas spends more money than any state on these programs and has the second highest teenage pregnancy rate in the country. Apparently it's not in the South, though, right? Kids are only given half the story about condoms. They have the impression that they don't work. There are some things that they fail for, but they have so much information about why they don't work that they don't use them. The same thing with contraceptives. Basically, ignorance is encouraged. Silence. People don't learn about really about sex or sexuality and a lot of other things. They are misinformed. I'm jumping over to other parts of the world now where virginity is highly prized, and we have more virginity testing. This is a group marriage in India where I think 350 young women were all subjected to virginity tests, which are humiliating, inaccurate, and potentially dangerous because of infections. Again, reviving virginity testing in South Africa. They'll do as many as 600 girls in a public place. With unwashed hands, the tests are inaccurate. Again, the potential for infection to be spread. Super humiliating if someone is declared not to be a virgin, even though it's very inaccurate. This also drives girls in particular to use other forms of sex other than vaginal sex. So the rates of anal sex are much higher in South Africa and in the United States for pledgers. And other riskier behaviors than vaginal sex. Oops. The valuation of virginity in society also subjects women to more violence and rape. There are a number of countries now where it's believed if you're HIV positive, you have sex with a virgin, that will cure the HIV, both in Asia and Africa. It's also something when it's prized, some men want it more. In fact, two of our four authors lost their virginity in a date rape because I was one of them, in 1964, I think, were seen as some sort of a prize. You know, the boy was known as the virgin killer. So the valuation of virginity as a commodity has an effect. There's also a very strong double standard almost everywhere. This is Sharia law in Nigeria. Two young girls, one who was sentenced to lashings because she'd had sex with her fiancé. Of course, nothing happened to the fiancé. Another one who was sentenced to lashings because she had been raped by three men and was pregnant, but nothing happened to them. Honor killings are quite common in many countries. In Egypt, if your wife appears not to be a virgin, it's okay in Upper Egypt to kill her. They're called cleansing killings. The UNFPA says there are about 5,000 of these a year, but that's what's registered. Marriage in many countries has become the number one risk factor for HIV transmission, and this is certainly largely in many countries because of this double standard between men and women. I lived in Cambodia for 3 years where this was the case. Girls were expected to be virgins as they were in this country in the 1950s, but the men were expected to be experienced, so they gained their experience with higher risk groups. And so it is right now the number one risk factor for women in Cambodia to be married, and it's not the only country that's the case in. Here you have women in India, 91% of them had only had sex with their husband, and yet you've got these high STD and HIV rates. Virginity is also used as a commodity, forfeited for financial security, especially in the societies where it's valued. Families, even though they value it, will send their young girls out to find sugar daddies. This is very common in African countries. So they bring some money into the household. Young virgins are made slaves of fetish priests in Ghana, and they bear children for them. Virginity for sale, I found several of these on YouTube. This particular young woman has been having an auction going on where she's selling her virginity, and she's American. She did her undergraduate degree in women's studies, I think, and she says if she gets enough money, she's going to do a master's degree in family counseling and something else. But she's up to $3.8 million selling her virginity. And you can see this stuff online. So she's asking, you know, if you think she's a prostitute, yeah, she says it's okay, but prostitution is legal in Nevada. Hymen reconstruction has become increasingly popular. It was in magazines when I lived in Morocco 12 years ago. It's, of course, women have to be affluent enough to afford it, but I was talking to a Canadian doctor in Ottawa last week who said for the first time in his life he had a woman come and ask him, could she get hymen reconstruction? Where would he send her? There are lots of contraindications to hymen reconstruction, a lot of dangers related to it. And I'm not even bringing up here female genital mutilation, which is used in many countries to sew women up so they can't have sex before they're married. This one is from Thailand. I got it right. And they found out that there were how sexually active young people were, and there was a lot of outrage because they wanted to change the behavior of young women and to have them on a path of chastity. And so this is just one indication of the kind of double standard that exists. We get all these conflicting images of female sexuality because a lot of this has to do with repression of female sexuality. So we get the contradiction between the chastity and premarital virginity, which was a widely held value in North America when I was this age. And then we get Madonna singing I'm a Virgin, which is, you know, soft porn. And if I think back, what struck me about this when I first got this grant application is how radically the view of virginity has changed in North America and Western Europe in the last two generations. And I began to feel that, you know, if I'm trying to evaluate the socioeconomic status of a household in a developing country, I would often say that a flush toilet is the best indicator of socioeconomic status. You've got to have enough money to buy the toilet, get the plumbing installed. You've got to have enough education to realize the value of a flush toilet. And I've come to feel that virginity, premarital virginity, as a value in society for women is about as good an indicator of the status of women in a society as a flush toilet is of socioeconomic status in a household in developing countries. So we have 10 observations that we feel are somewhat evidence-based, based on a hodgepodge of things we've been looking at, that are contraindications for promoting virginity for women, premarital virginity. First, it can expose women to humiliating, inaccurate virginity tests, and there are other countries, not just South Africa, where this has happened. And related traditions, like the blood on the bed sheets, which is, again, humiliating, especially when it can be wrong, with life-threatening consequences or social exclusion. Most of you will have read the Scarlet Letter and other things, including deeming girls to be unmarriageable. Promoting virginity can put young women in a position where they engage in other types of sexual behavior that is riskier. It inspires early marriage, which puts young girls at a higher risk of domestic violence, pregnancy complications, low birth weight babies, and low educational attainment, which is a major issue in this country. Promoting virginity makes marriage into a risk factor for HIV/AIDS transmission in many societies. The religious and socio-political values around premarital virginity for women tend to undermine or completely eliminate integrated sex and reproductive health education. When we're promoting virginity, premarital virginity as a value, we don't promote the other things. We don't equip people with the kind of education and skills they need to be sexual beings. Religious and socio-political values tend to stigmatize female sexuality and inculcate fear and shame around sexuality for young women, often limiting their ability to have fulfilled sexual lives. I've had male colleagues in Cambodia say they should teach the women to move. They just kind of lie there like boards, you know. It exacerbates, did I jump forward? No? Okay, last one. It exacerbates gender inequities in society. All right.